Hello and welcome to this special sauces edition. It's a saucy edition of the Beyond online sessions. We're exploring not a play. We're not exploring a play. We're not even exploring a narrative poem or something that's a bit performative. We're exploring a source for a play, hence my terrible wordplay there. So we're looking at the source for the lamentable and true tragedy of Master Arden of Feathersham in Kent, a play which we have already done a first look exploring session on, and there may even be other material about it available now also on the podcast. I don't know when this comes out, whether there will be, but if there is, look in the show description. There will be some links to some additional material, but we are going to look at some material from Hollingshed's Chronicle about a true crime. So this is all true. And, or at least we will look into that. I think this is the only meaningful source for this particular true story. I may be wrong on that point. At some point, someone transferred it into play form. So we're going to go back to the original source material and see what we get from it. And reading today, we have Eric, we have Alexandra, and we have Greg. So without further ado, we are going to dive into this particular text and find out what's going on. So Eric, followed by Alexandra, then Greg, then myself, let's read on until we decide, find a nice point to stop.
About this time, there was at Feversham in Kent a gentleman named Arden, most cruelly murdered and slain by the procurement of his own wife, the which murder for the horribleness thereof, although otherwise it may seem to be but a private matter, and therefore, as it were, impertinent to this history, I have thought good to set it forth somewhat at large, having the instructions delivered to me by them that have used some diligence to gather the true understanding of the circumstances. This Arden was a man of a tall and comely personage, and matched in marriage with a gentlewoman, young, tall, and well-favoured of shape and countenance, who, chancing to fall in familiarity with one Mosby, a tailor by occupation, black swart man, servant to the Lord North, it happened this Mosby, upon some misliking, to fall out with her. But she, being desirous to be in favour with him again, sent him a pair of silver dice by one Adam Fowl, dwelling at the Fleur-de-Lis in Feversham.
I'm just going to pause there, because actually I think we should just take in that data, and also that we have another person in the room. Liza joins us as well. So we're just getting some detail about this particular crime. So this is within the text of Hollingshed, which is a massive books of history and chronicles and stuff going all the way back to unreported time and stuff that is mostly made up through to the present, the then almost present day. That's why it has this sort of, otherwise it might seem but a private matter, and therefore it was impertinent to history. This is an impertinence to history, which I think is very reasonable. But yes, so we've got Arden, who's tall and comely, matched in marriage with a gentlewoman, young, tall, and well-favoured of shape and countenance, who is fallen in with one Mosby, a tailor. And there's been a falling out, but she's sent him a pair of silver dice to turn that around. Alexandra.
I think it's very important for the viewer or listener at home to know that this pair of silver dice is made by someone called Foul, like F-O-U-L-E, like unpleasant, who dwells at the Fleur de Lis in Feversham. So flower as in the powder, and lice like the creature. Obviously this is the Fleur de Lis, but it's just, I feel like that's important information that a not reader needs to know.
Yes, yes. Sometimes original spelling it creates interesting artifacts, which the listener at home would not get. Let us carry on with Alexandra, then Greg, then Liza.
There was a painter dwelling in Feversham who had skills...
After which she resorted.
That is not my paragraph. After which he resorted to her again, and oftentimes lay in Arden's house, insomuch that within 2 years after he obtained such favour at her hands that he lay with her, or, as they term it, kept her, in abusing her body. And although, as it was said, Arden perceived right well their mutual familiarity to be much greater than their honesty, yet, because he would not offend her, and so lose the benefit which he hoped to gain at some of her friend's hands in bearing with her lewdness, which he might have lost if he should have fallen out with her, he was contented to wink at her filthy disorder, and both permitted and also invited Moseby very often to lodge in his house. And thus it continued a good space before any practice was begun by them against Master Arden. She, at length inflamed in love with Moseby and loathing her husband, wished, and after practiced, the means how to hasten his end.
There was a painter dwelling in Faversham who had skill of poisons, as was reported. She therefore demanded of him whether it were true that he had such skill in that feat or not. And he denied not that he had indeed. Yea, said she, but I would rather have such a one made as should have most vehement and speedy operation to dispatch the eater thereof. That can I do, quoth he, and forthwith made her such a one and willed her to put it into the bottom of a porringer, and then after to pour milk on it, which circumstance she, forgetting, did clean contrary, putting in the milk first, and afterward the poison. Now, Master Arden, purposing that day to ride to Canterbury, his wife brought him his breakfast, which was wont to be milk and butter. He, having received a spoonful or two of the milk, misliked the taste and colour thereof, and said to his wife, Mistress Alice, what milk have you given me here? Wherewithal she tilted it over with her hand, saying, I ween nothing can please you. Then he took horse and rode towards Canterbury, and by the way fell into extreme purging upwards and downwards, and so escaped for that time.
After this, his wife fell in acquaintance with one Green of Feversham, servant to Sir Anthony Ager, from which Green, Master Arden, has wrested a piece of ground on the backside of the Abbey of Feversham, and there had blows and great threats passed betwixt them about that matter. Therefore she, knowing that Green hated her husband, began to practice with him how to make him away, and concluded that if he could get any that would kill him, he should have £10 for a reward. This Green, having doings for his master, Sir Anthony Ager, had occasion to go up to London, where his master then lay, and having some charge up with him, desired one Bradshaw, a goldsmith of Feversham that was his neighbour, to accompany him to Gravesend, and he would content him for his pains. This Bradshaw, being a very honest man, was content and rode with him. And when they came to Raynham Down, they chanced to see three or four serving men that were coming from Leeds, and therewith Bradshaw espied coming up the hill from Rochester one Black Will, a terrible, cruel ruffian, with a sword and buckler, and another with a great staff on his neck.
Then said Bradshaw to Green, we are happy that here cometh some company from Leeds, for here cometh up against us as murthering a knave as any is in England. If it were not for them, we might chance hardly to escape without loss of our money and lives. Yea, thought Green, as he had after confessed, such a one is for my purpose, and therefore asked, which is he? Yonder is he, quoth Bradshaw, the same that hath the sword and buckler. His name is Black Will. How know you that? Said Green. Bradshaw answered, I knew him at Boulogne, where he both served. He was a soldier, and I, where we both served, he was a soldier, and I was Sir Richard Cavendish's man, and there he committed many robberies and heinous murders on such as travelled betwixt Boulogne and France.
By this time, the other company of serving men came to them, and they, going all together, met with Black Will and his fellow. The serving men knew Black Will, and saluting him, demanded of him whither he went. He answered, by his blood, for his use was to swear almost at every word. I know not, nor care not, but set up my staff, and even as it falleth, I go. If thou, quoth they, wilt go back again to Gravesend, we will give thee thy supper. By his blood, said he, I care not, I am content, have with you. And so he returned again with them. Then Black Will took acquaintance of Bradshaw, saying, Fellow Bradshaw, how dost thou? Bradshaw, unwilling to renew acquaintance or to have aught to do with so shameless a ruffian, said, "Why, do you know me?" "Yea, that I do," quoth he. "Did not we serve in Boulogne together?" "But you must pardon me," quoth Bradshaw, "for I have forgotten you."
Then Green talked with Black Will and said, "When you have supped, come to mine host's house at such a sign, and I will give you the sack and sugar." "By his blood," said he, "I thank you. I will come and take it, I warrant you." According to his promise, he came, and there they made good cheer. Then Black Will and Green went and talked apart from Bradshaw, and there concluded together that if he would kill Master Arden, he should have £10 for his labour. Then he answered, "The match made to murder Arden. By his wounds, that I will, if I may know him. Marry tomorrow in Paul's, I will show him to thee," said Green. Then they left their talk, and Green bade him go home to his host's house. Then Green wrote a letter to Mistress Arden, and amongst other things put in these words: "We have got a man for our purpose. We may thank my brother Bradshaw." Now Bradshaw, not knowing any of this, took the letter of him, and in the morning departed home again and delivered the letter to Mistress Arden, and Green and Black Will went up to London at the tide.
And there we'll pause, because I think we've taken in enough of that plot. So there's lots of interesting detail here, and lots of things to appeal to a playwright in the sense of there is dialogue in this chronicle, a lot of which I think has been obviously adjusted, but does vaguely in shape appear in the play itself as well. Some of that bargaining over stuff I seem to recall. I may actually have a little look at that later. But there's interesting details about Arden knowing about what's going on with his wife and Mosby there, and that's and the reason why he keeps silent. Then we have the detail of the first murder attempt, which is due to you've always got to follow your murder recipes properly, making sure you mix in your poison thoroughly from the bottom up, not from the top downwards.
Well, it's very much a British thing. Do you put the milk in first, or do you put the poison in first?
Yeah, I know, and you know, it depends what part of the country you are. That there are different traditions, So he's been murder attempt fails. That's a direct poisoning attempt by his wife, and then I say we have a sort of ongoing outsourcing of murdering going on here, involving unwitting and witting combatants. Thoughts in the room about this from those who remember the play and those who don't. Anyone want to leap in? They're poised like a coiled spring. Eric?
I seem to remember some of these attempts, but I seem to remember like failed attempts being like sort of, you know, being locked out of a building and not being able to enter and basically getting hit over the head with parts of falling shutters or something, window shutters or something like that. I can't remember what they're called, but yeah.
It may or may not be this particular murder. And there are many murder attempts in Arden, so
yeah.
It's always difficult to get them confused. But we've got a lot of murder. So we're on to plot number two at the moment, and that's the most complicated one so far. We have all these cohorts of people who are involved. Any other thoughts? Eric?
So this is about as reliable as the spoil of Antwerp document that we read a few weeks ago, or months, or I don't know, years, time has passed.
It was a few months ago, yes.
In terms of accuracy, I mean.
Well, I mean, this is the point. We have no, I don't think we've got any other actual, you know, we don't have, I think, any court documents or anything specifically talking about this to actually back up this. I could be wrong on that front. There might be more material out there. So it could all be lies. That's entirely possible. It's probably an exaggeration, depending on what the author's intent is in terms of telling this story. Liza?
Yeah, I'm interested by... At the moment, we've got two people who are described as being dark of complexion, and they're the two baddies. They're Mosby, who's having an affair with the wife, and Black Will. And I don't know, you know, it's impossible to know whether either of them were people of African ancestry or whether they were just dark of hair and a bit and complexion. But it is that the whole thing that feeds into racism at this time, the equation of blackness or darkness with an evil personality or sinisterness.
Yes, and it also feeds into, you know, questions of people who work outside who have darker skin through the sun and things like that. They're all part of that ongoing narrative, it's going to get worse, people, as time goes on. Other thoughts? No. Okay, I think Greg was up next. So we have a letter's been written to Mistress Arden. There's a plot laid thanking Bradshaw. Let's see how this goes. It's Greg next. And then I've lost track. And then it's Liza, then it's me.
At the time appointed, Green showed Black Will Master Arden walking in pools. Then said Black Will, "What is he that goeth after him?" Marry, said Green, "one of his men." "By his blood," said Black Will, "I will kill them both." "Nay," said Green, "do not so, for he is of counsel with us in this matter." "By his blood," said he, "I care not for that. I will kill them both." "Nay," said Green, "in any wise, do not so." Then Black Will thought to have killed Master Arden in Paul's churchyard, but there were so many gentlemen that accompanied him to dinner that he missed his purpose. Green showed all this talk to Master Arden's man, whose name was Michael, which ever after stood in doubt of Black Will, lest he should kill him. The cause that this Michael conspired with the rest against his master was, that it was determined that he should marry a kinswoman, Mosby's.
After this, Master Arden lay at a certain parsonage which he held in London, and therefore his man Michael and Green agreed that Black Will should come in the night to the parsonage, where he should find the doors left open that he might come in and murder Master Arden. This Michael, having his master to bed, left open the doors according to the appointment. His master, then being in bed, asked him if he had shut fast the doors, and he said, yea. But afterwards, fearing lest Black Will would kill him as well as his master, after he was in bed himself, he rose again and shut the doors, bolting them fast. So that Black Will, coming thither and finding the doors shut, departed, being disappointed at that time. The next day, Black Will came to Green in a great chafe, swearing and staring because he was so deceived, and with many terrible oaths threatened to kill Master Arden's man first wherever he met him. No, said Green, do not so. I will first know the cause of shutting the doors.
Then Green met and talked with Arden's man and asked him why he did not leave open the doors according to his promise. Marry, said Michael, I will show you the cause. My master yesternight did that he never did before, for after I was in bed he rose up and shut the doors, and in the morning rated me for leaving them unshut. And herewith Green and Black Will were pacified. Arden, being ready to go homewards, his maid came to Green and said, this night will my master go down. Whereupon it was agreed that Black Will should kill him on Rainham Down. When Master Arden came to Rochester, his man, still fearing that Black Will would kill him with his master, pricked his horse of purpose and made him to halt, to the end he might protract the time and tarry behind. His master asked him why his horse halted. He said, I know not. Well, quoth his master, when ye come to the smith here before, between Rochester and the hill, foot over against Jim, remove his shoe and search him, and then come after me. So Master Arden rode on, and there he came to the place where Black Will lay in wait for him. There overtook him in divers gentlemen of his acquaintance, who kept him company, so that Black Will missed here also of his purpose.
After that, Master Arden was come home. He sent, as he usually did, his man to Sheepy? Not sure how to pronounce that. To Sir Thomas Sheppy. Cheney. Sheppy? I'm not entirely sure. Anyway, Sheppy. His man to Sheppy. Sir Thomas Cheney, then Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports, about certain business. And at his coming away, he had a letter delivered by... sent by Sir Thomas Cheney to his master. When he came home, his mistress took the letter and kept it, willing her man to tell his master that he had a letter delivered him by Sir Thomas Cheney, and that he had lost it. Adding that, he thought it best that his master should go the next morning to Sir Thomas, because he knew not the matter. He said he would, and therefore he willed his man to be stirring betimes. In this meanwhile, Black Will and one George Shakebag, his companion, were kept in a storehouse of Sir Anthony Agers of Preston by Green's appointment, and thither came Mistress Arden to see him, bringing and sending him meat and drink many times. He, therefore, lurking there and watching some opportunity for his purpose, was willed in any wise to be up early in the morning to lie in wait for Master Arden in a certain broom close betwixt Feversham and the ferry, which close he must needs pass, there to do his feet. Now Black Will stirred in the morning betimes, but missed the way and tarried at a wrong place.
I will just briefly pause there. So that's the fifth attempt I've counted to kill Arden. I can understand why the play ended up being what it was, which is to a degree quite farcical. Because it is. It's reading like a merry tale. It's reading like some of these jest books that we've been doing. Because it seems, I mean, this is a story about someone who does actually get murdered in the end, so we shouldn't enjoy it too much. You know,
dude, spoilers.
Yeah, he dies. He dies. Don't, you know, let's not be silly here. So yeah, we've got but we have these constant sort of fails. So Michael, who's conspires against his master, but immediately locks the door that he unlocked and just goes, oh, I don't want to do that, and then lies to them. So it's all very shaky, and they're just, yeah, it's not going well. In the play, I think they introduced George Shakebag pretty much at the off with Black Will. I think they're introduced as characters together straight away, as opposed to here, he's introduced later as his companion. So... of course, in a play, you want a double act because then you've got two people who can talk to each other to explain the plot or similar. But so far, I mean, it's pretty much a straight rendering to play text from this, as far as I can tell, with very few changes. It's just almost just say what you see. It seems to work very well. Eric?
I was just going to say, yeah, I seem to remember in the play that it was sort of like he went for dinner at someone's house and then he was sort of like, yeah, I'm going to go home now. Thank you for the food. And then his host basically goes, oh, let me give you lend you my serving man to sort of walk you home with a torch. And that was why he doesn't get murdered in the street, basically. Mm. Yeah, at least in the play. To my recollection, which was quite it felt almost disappointing in the play, but it kind of explains it.
Does anyone who remembers is Will quite so up and at him to I'll kill everyone, because he's got this whole thing of he's walking along with a servant, he's going, oh, I'll kill both of them, and Green's going, no, don't kill both of them, and it's like Green is constantly saying, no, don't do that, no, he's one of us, you can't kill him, and all of these little details. I don't recall, it almost feels like a missed opportunity if it's not there, because it feels like that's good comedy business, and I which the play leans definitely into. So, but maybe it is there and I've just forgotten it. But yeah. Okay, any other thoughts before we go on? Alexandra?
Just briefly, that, you know, setting aside the fact that we are looking at this from a place of familiarity with its successor, that just as a piece of text itself, it's not even trying to keep us entertained with all these little character details and so on, and it's succeeding marvelously, I find. You know, we've got very clear narrative sequence. We've also got, you know, raising of stakes and also changes in not changes in character so much as in sort of I don't know what the word is. They don't evolve so much as entrench themselves into their positions. But it's interesting.
I do love, you know, just those little lines where it's just, you know, now Black Will stirred in the morning betimes, but missed the way and tarried in the wrong place. And it's just, you know, it functions like a punchline. You know, it seems that does seem to be authorial intent. Not just this story is a bit like that. But then, yeah. How much of this is true? How much of this has been exaggerated because it makes a good story? This is where we lean into the whole Quest Jess book tradition. Is has this been literaturized beyond the exposition of fact about this case? We don't know. Okay. Let us move on. Who was next? Alexandra.
Oh, sir. Master Arden and his man, yes?
Yes.
Master Arden and his man, coming on their way early in the morning towards Shaunlan, where Sir Thomas Cheney lay, as they were almost come to the broom close, his man, always fearing that Black Will would kill him with his master, feigned that he had lost his purse. "Why," said his master, "thou foolish knave, couldst thou not look to thy purse but lose it? What was in it?" "£3," said he. "Why, then go thy ways back again like a knave," said his master, "and seek it, for being so early as it is, there is no man stirring, and therefore thou mayst be sure to find it, and then come and overtake me at the ferry." But, nevertheless, by reason that Black Will lost his way, Master Arden escaped yet once again. At that time, Black Will yet thought he should have been sure to have met him homewards, but whether that some of the Lord Warden's men accompanied him back to Feversham, or that, being in doubt, for that it was late to go through the broom close, and therefore took another way, Black Will was disappointed then also.
But now, St. Valentine's Fair being at hand, the conspirators thought to dispatch their devilish intention at that time. Mosby minded to pick some quarrel to Master Arden at the fair, to fight with him, for he said he could not find in his heart to murder a gentleman in that sort as his wife wished, although she had made a solemn promise to him and he again to her to be in all points as man and wife together, and thereupon they both received the sacrament on a Sunday in London openly in a church there. But this device to fight with him would not serve. For Master Arden, both then and at other times, had been greatly provoked by Mosby to fight with him, but he would not. Now, Mosby had a sister that dwelt in a tenement of Master Arden's near to his house in Feversham. And on the fair even, Black Will was sent for to come thither, and Green, bringing him thither, met there with Mistress Arden, accompanied with Michael, her man, and one of her maids. There were also Mosby and George Shakebag, and there they devised to have killed him, in manner as afterwards he was. But yet Mosby at the first would not agree to that cowardly murdering of him, but in a fury flung away and went up the Abbey Street towards the Flower de Lis, the house of the aforenamed Adam Fowle, where he did often host. But before he came thither, now at this time, a messenger overtook him that was sent from Mistress Arden, desiring him of all loves to come back again and help to accomplish the matter he knew of. Hereupon he returned to him again, and at his coming back she fell down upon her knees to him and besought him to go through with the matter, as if he loved her, he would be content to do, sith as she had divers times told him he needed not to doubt, for there was not any that would care for his death nor make any great inquiry for them that should dispatch him.
Thus, she being earnest with him, at length he was contented to agree unto that horrible device, and thereupon they conveyed Black Will into Master Arden's house, putting him into a closet at the end of his parlour. Before this, they sent out of the house all the servants, those excepted which were privy to the devised murder. Then went Molesby to the door, and there stood in a nightgown of silk girded about him, and this was twixt 6 and 7 o'clock at night. Master Arden, having been at the neighbour's house of his, named Dumpkin, and having cleared certain reckonings betwixt them, came home, and finding Molesby standing at the door, asked him if it were supper-time. "I think not," quoth Molesby. "It is not yet ready." "Then let us go and play a game at the tables in the mean season," said Master Arden. And so they went straight into the parlour, and as they came by through the hall, his wife was walking there, and Master Arden said, "How now, Mistress Alice?" But she made small answer to him. In the meantime, one changed the wicket door of the entry. When they came into the parlour, Molesby sat down on the bench, having his face toward the place where Blackwell stood. Then Michael, Master Arden's man, stood at his master's back, holding a candle in his hand, to shadow Black Will, that Arden might by no means perceive him coming forth. In their play, Molesby said thus, which seemed to be the watchword for Black Will's coming forth, "Now may I take you, sir, if I will." "Take me," quoth Master Arden. "Which way?" With that, Black Will stepped forth and cast a towel about his neck, so to stop his breath, and strangle him. Then Molesby, having at his girdle a pressing iron of 14 pounds weight, struck him in the head with the same, so that he fell down and gave a great groan, insomuch that they thought he had been killed. So, that's quite a change of tone. That's quite a change in storytelling style as well. This is a text that is doing... It is slightly dramatic, and it's dramatic storytelling in really clear ways. So, we have what is, again, still a sort of comic plot, in a sense, of the dressing up and the in the house of... and hiding in the cupboard. After we've had some question, debate here about precisely what we mean by a broom close. I suggest it's almost a thicket, isn't it? It's a sort of a copse sort of area thing, kind of thing. From which we make brooms, I assume. Contradict me, please. So, seventh time lucky, I believe, or unlucky on Arden's part. I've counted 6 attempts prior to this, and this one appears to be successful. So, thoughts on the room? Yes, Alexandra.
I should like to share a clever thought and a silly thought. The broom is a plant. It is the Planta genista that leads to the name of Plantagenet. There you go. That is an intelligent thought. A silly thought now for you. I just really enjoy the idea that we went from trying to get to kill him, you know, trying to sneak up on him from a broom close to a broom closet. Mm-hmm. That makes me very happy. And the author that didn't make that be the case in the play missed the trick.
Mm. I think there was definitely copses or bushes and things, but I don't think they made that explicit thing in the same way, but then I feel that it would be lost. It would feel you'd have to force it, wouldn't it? You'd have to make some forced dialogue to make that land. I think that was a reasonable choice. I think, you know, something has to go out with the adaptation. Some of that detail I don't recall coming into the play. That's all seemed a bit fiddly and narrative-y rather than action-y. But again, I've got to the part of the play where I've forgotten precisely how the order of service goes. Do we have people? I love the name Dumpkin. It's that kind of detail that makes me believe it's all true. And they're playing a game, and we have this take me line of which is again reference to how the game's going. And just the way that, you know, he talks to Alice and she makes a small answer. Nobody's talking to him, and he's like, If this was a mob hit, you know, he would have twigged by now that he was going to be taken out. He knows something's wrong, but he doesn't know what. Any other thoughts? I'm talking a lot because nobody else is. Liza, then Eric.
What I'm seeing is that you can use broom for dye. It's a yellow color, and if you add it to woad, you get Kendall green, which I didn't know. Oh. So that might be one reason they were growing it. It may have had other uses, what I'm intrigued by is Mosby's respect, in as much as the word can be used toward someone you intend to murder, Mosby's respect toward Arden and his unwillingness to kill him unawares. Mosby wants to pick a quarrel with him and murder him that way, which would be a much better defense in court, because then it could be a fight that got out of hand. And, in court, they would understand that. Whereas if you have someone privily made away at your house, that can't be self-defense. That is murder, premeditated murder at that. And that Mosby is so, at least according to this version, is so devoted to this idea of not killing Arden at unawares, which, as well as being more criminal in appearance, it's also cowardly, at least between two men, for a man to kill another man unawares.
He has to be talked into it by Anne.
He's so angry that he leaves the meeting. He's like, fine, well, I guess I'm not going to murder anyone. Mm. And he leaves. And she sends after him going, if you love me, please do the murder. And he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and then he is the person who does the coup de grace, or the seeming coup de grace.
Coup de grace.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eric.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know how heavy this is in kilograms and stuff, but like, still 14 pounds weight of pressing iron, like, sounds like a very heavy thing.
Yeah, that's an iron, like a flat iron you would use to iron cloth flat. You would heat it up by the fire and you would iron with it. So yeah, it's bloody heavy. I don't know why he's got it hanging at his girdle, though.
Well, and then he struck Arden on the head with that, and there's a part of me going, that's not really, you can't pass that off as an accident. It's not like I was ironing and he just fell on the iron. And also I think the mob would have had a bit more luck first time.
it's a bit messy. It's a bit and I'm not sure what their plan is after this point. It's also all this in additional detail that we're getting, you know, all these little lines of dialogue, you know, which presumably, assuming that this is all true, comes from, you know, the confessions of the various people, you know, that they told them that this is what happened. But of course, you have no independent witnesses to any of this, because the only person you could say is independent is the person who's somewhat dead. It's an interesting question how this might all be the person, the stuff that comes together. Anyway, let us read on. Who was next? It'll be Eric, then Greg, then Alexandra, then Liza. Or is it Eric, then Alexandra, then Greg? That's the one. Yes, yes.
I realised I was pointing down, but I don't know if on your screen Alexandra is underneath my screen. So,
The faces move around, Eric. There's no continuity.
Then they bear him away to lay him in the counting house, and as they were about to lay him down, the pangs of death coming upon him, he gave a great groan and stretched himself. Then Black Will gave him a great gash in the face, and so killed him out of hand, laid him along, took the money out of his purse and the rings from his fingers. Then coming out of the counting house, said, Now the feat is done. Give me my money. So Mistress Arden gave him 10 pounds, and he, coming to Green, had a horse with him, and so rode his ways. After that, Black Will was gone. Mistress Arden came into the counting house and with a knife gave him 7 or 8 fixed into the breast. Then they made clean the parlor, took a clout and wiped where it was bloody, and strewed again the rushes that were shuffled with struggling, and cast the clout with which they wiped the blood and the knife that was bloody, wherewith she had wounded her husband, into a tub by the well's side, where afterwards both the same clout and knife were found. Thus, this wicked woman with her accomplices was most shamefully murdered her own husband, who most entirely loved her all his lifetime. Then she sent for 2 Londoners to supper, the one named Prune and the other Cole, that were grocers, which before the murder was committed were bidden to supper. When they came, she said, "I marvel where Master Arden is. We will not tarry for him. Come ye and sit down, for he will not be long." Then Mosby's sister was sent for. She came and sat down, and so they were merry.
After supper, Mistress Arden caused her daughter to play on the virginals, and they danced, and they with them, and she with them, and so seemed to protract time, as it were, till Master Arden should come, and she said, "I marvel where he is so long. Well, he will come anon, I am sure. I pray you, in the meanwhile, let us play a game at the tables." But the Londoners said they must go to their host's house, or else they should be shut out of doors, and so, taking their leave, departed. When they were gone, the servants that were not privy to the murder were sent abroad into the town, some to seek their master, and some of other errands, all saving Michael and a maid, Mosby's sister, and one of Mr. Sarden's own daughters. Then they took the dead body and carried it out to lay it in a field next to the churchyard, and joining to his garden wall, through the which he went to the church. In the meantime, it began to snow, and when they came to the garden gate, they remembered that they had forgotten the key, and one went in for it, and finding it, at length brought it, opened the gate, and carried the corpse into the same field, as it were 10 paces from the garden gate, and laid him down on his back, straight in his nightgown, with his slippers on, and between one of his slippers and his foot a long rush or two remained. When they had thus laid him down, they returned the same way they came through the garden into the house.
They being returned thus back again into the house, the doors were opened, and the servants returned home that had been sent abroad. And being now very late, she sent forth her folks again to make inquiry for him in diverse places, namely among the best in the town where he was wont to be, who made answer that they could tell nothing of him. Then she began to make an outcry and said, "Never woman had such neighbours as I have, and here we wept." Insomuch that her neighbours came in and found her making great lamentation, pretending to marvel what was become of her husband. Whereupon the mayor and others came to make search for him. The fair was wont to be kept partly in the town and partly in the abbey, but Arden, for his own private lucre and covetous gain, had this present year procured it to be wholly kept within the abbey ground which he had purchased, and so reaping all the gains to himself and bereaving the town of that portion which was wont to come to the inhabitants, got many a bitter curse. The mayor, going about the fair in this search, at length came to the ground where Arden lay, and, as it happened, Prune, the grocer, getting sight of him, first said, "Stay, for me think I see one lie here." And so they, looking and beholding the body, found that it was Master Arden, lying there thoroughly dead, and viewing diligently the manner of his body and hurts, found the rushes sticking in his slippers, and marking further, espied certain footsteps by reason of the snow betwixt where he lay, the place where he lay, and the garden door.
Then the mayor commanded every man to stay, and herewith appointed some to go about, to come in at the inner side of the house through the garden as the way lay to the place where Master Arden's dead body did lie, who all the way as they came perceived footings still before them in the snow. And so it appeared plainly that he was brought along that way from the house through the garden and so into the field where he lay. Then the mayor and his company that were with him went into the house, and knowing her evil demeanor in times past, examined her of the matter. But she defied them and said, I would you should know I am no such woman. Then they examined her servants, and in the examination, by reason of a piece of his hair, any blood, of a piece of his hair and blood, found near to the house in the way, by the which they carried him forth, and likewise by the knife, which with which she had thrust him into the breast, and the clout wherewith they wiped the blood away, which they found in the tub, and into the which the same were thrown, they all confessed the matter, and herself, beholding her husband's blood, said, oh, the blood of God help, for this blood have I shed.
And there we'll just briefly pause before we go into the home straight. So we've got the cleanup operation for the crime scene. Arden wasn't quite dead, so there had to be taking him out there. They're doing a great gash in the face.
But how do they know that he died from the gash in the face and not from his wife stabbing him in the heart afterwards?
I don't know. Maybe because of the clotting or the way the blood. Maybe they knew these things. Maybe the CSI of the time was better than we thought. Alexandra.
Yes. Yeah. there are things for which you don't need a lot of specialist equipment to be able to tell. And there's also things like, you know, how big a gash would that one have been? How clearly would it be that the other one is a stabbing in the heart, etc., etc.? And or rather just in the general chest area, etc., etc. So, yeah, people who, you know, slaughtered animals or kind of had encountered that a lot and also encountered death from plagues and from other foul purposes, they knew a lot of what they were doing, this early modern forensics team.
And it has to be said that Black Will does not take a moment's thought to loot the body straight away. All the things, all the money and the rings, etc. And then they basically sort of sort out this not so much an alibi, but a narrative about where's Arden? Oh, where is it? I don't know where he's gone. Oh, he's very late. Have you seen Arden? Oh, we have to go because I'm sure be here in a minute. Back and forth before they actually try and get rid of the body again. Properly, which was where we get to. Questions of Snow and finding the body and all these other little bits and pieces, which in the play is very contracted. The from murder to discovery is very quick in the play, as I recall. And also, I don't think the murder is with the weight. I think he just gets stabbed straight off. So slight tweakings there in the dramatic retelling, but I suppose they want to just sort of get to the end by that point. Having protracted this murder plot so long, you don't want to necessarily linger too long afterwards. But they're looking for blood, they're looking for any hair along the way, they're talking to the servants. These people, they know their onions, they know what they're doing. You know, especially when they found the body. You know, they know to look for more evidence. Okay, they didn't have DNA, but they knew how to sort this stuff out. Alexandra.
And another small point I'd like to make is that the people who are plotting the murder and then sort of hiding the evidence and concocting a new story and all of this, they're doing very clever things whilst also doing a few very stupid things from our perspective as people who watch CSI. But again, if you don't have that kind of information all around you, if you haven't got How to Get Away with Murder on your Netflix, because you're in the 1600s, this is all very plausible.
And as we've seen from other murder accounts, when people do these crimes, they make really rookie mistakes and very obvious things, and people discover them quite quickly. Sometimes, not always. Eric.
The more we read this, the more I kind of want to see this as a sort of Murder, She Wrote episode. or, you know, sort of Inspector Clouseau kind of thing. I don't know.
In a sense, that's precisely what the Arden of Faversham, the play, ends up being. I mean, it is mostly farce, in a weird way. I mean, and Arden is presented in this narrative as a much nicer character. The play makes him into a bit of a bastard. And, you know, he definitely says he loves his wife. He does have a disagreement with someone, but it doesn't state precisely whether it's a, you know, how far that goes. He's presented in quite a neutral way within this text. I mean, he's not wholly neutral, but he's not presented as, in a sense, quite an unpleasant figure in Arden. There's part of you going, well, he doesn't necessarily deserve to die, but he's not a great guy. So it creates a series of ambiguities about the whole nature of what's going on here. Eric.
Wasn't it also, I think, because here there was a mention of the Abbey grounds that he'd bought or something. I seem to remember that was used as a motive, like in the play or something like that. It was definitely mentioned earlier in the play.
Yeah.
That he's kind of trying to buy his way up into nobility or something.
There's definitely some sharp practice going on.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go into the latter stages. Greg, I'm going to ask you to read the first paragraph coming up. Then they were all attached. Then we'll go back to our usual circuit of Eric, Alexandra, and then we run out of text.
Then they were all attached and committed to prison, and the mayor with others went presently to the Flower de Lis, where they found Bosby in bed. And as they came towards him, they espied his hose and purse stained with some of Master Arden's blood. And when he asked what they meant by their coming in such sort, they said, "See here, ye may understand wherefore, by these tokens," showing him the blood on his hose and purse. Then he confessed the deed, and so he and all the others that had conspired the murder were apprehended and laid in prison, except Green, Black Will, and the painter. Which painter and George Shakebag, that was also fled before, were never heard of. Shortly were the sessions kept at Faversham, where all the prisoners were arraigned and condemned. And thereupon, being examined whether they had any other accomplices, Mistress Arden accused Bradshaw, upon occasion of the letter of the sent by Green from Gravesend, as before ye have heard, which words had none other meaning, but only by Bradshaw's describing of Black Will's qualities. Green judged him a meet instrument for the execution of their pretended murder. Whereto, notwithstanding, as Green confessed at his death certain years after, this Bradshaw was never made privy. Howbeit, he was upon this accusation of Mistress Arden immediately sent for to the sessions and indicted and declaration made against him as a procurer of Black Will to kill Master Arden, which proceeded wholly by misunderstanding of the words contained in the letter which he brought from Green.
Then he desired to talk with the persons condemned, and his request was granted. He therefore demanded of them if they knew him, or ever had any conversation with him, and they all said no. Then the letter being showed and read, he declared the very truth of the matter, and upon what occasion he told Green of Black Will. Nevertheless, he was condemned and suffered. These condemned persons were diversely executed in sundry places, for Michael, Master Arden's man, was hanged in chains at Feversham, and one of the maids was burnt there, pitifully bewailing her case, and crying down on her mistress that she had brought her to this end, for the which she would never forgive her. Mosby and his sister were hanged in Smithfield at London. Mistress Arden was burned at Canterbury, the 4th and 20th of March. Green came again certain years after, was apprehended, condemned, and hanged in chains in the highway betwixt Ospring and Bowton against Feversham. Black Will was burnt on a scaffold at Flishing in Zealand. Adam Fowle, that dwelt at the Flower in Feversham, was brought into trouble about this matter and carried up to London, with his legs bound under the horse belly, and committed to prison in the Marshalsea. For that, Mosby was heard to say, had it not been for Adam Fowle, Well, I had not come to this trouble, meaning that the bringing of the silver dice for a token to him from Mistress Arden, as ye have heard, occasioned him to renew familiarity with her again. But when the matter was thoroughly ripped up, and that Mosby had cleared him, protesting that he was never of knowledge in any behalf of the matter, the man's innocency preserved him.
This one thing seemeth very strange and notable, touching Master Arden, that in the place where he was laid, being dead, all the proportion of his body might be seen 2 years after, and more, so plain as could be, for the grass did not grow where his body had touched, but between his legs, between his arms, and about the hollowness of his neck, and round about his body, and where his legs, arms, head, or any other part of his body had touched, no grass growed at all that time, so that many strangers came in that meantime, besides the townsmen, to see the print of his body there on the ground in that field, which field he had, as some have reported, most cruelly taken from a woman that had been a widow to one Cook, and after married to one Richard Reed, a mariner, to the great hindrance of her and her husband, the said Reed, for they had long enjoyed it by a lease which they had of it for many years, not then expired. Nevertheless, he got it from them. For the which, the said Reed's wife not only exclaimed against him in shedding many a salt tear, but also cursed him most bitterly, even to his face, wishing many a vengeance to light upon him, and that all the world might wonder on him, which was thought then to come to pass when he was thus murdered, and lay in that field from midnight till the morning, and so all that day, being the fair day till night. All the which day there were many hundreds of people came wondering about him. Thus far, touching this horrible and heinous murder of Master Arden. To return then where we left.
About this time, the King's Majesty, calling his High Court of Parliament, held the same at Westminster the 23rd day of January, etc., 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 back to the business of 1551. Many details there. Sort of general unpacking, getting people to confess, going on there. Various judgment decisions were then made. Now, many of them are in the play. One of the maids was burnt there. That one... I mean, I, you know, let's. It's a pretty horrible death for many of these people. But what did the maid do?
Carried the body into the field, along with one of the daughters. That's it. Mm. Yeah, I know.
There's not really a sort of sliding scale of justice here, is there? It does feel like someone made an example of this lot, and just went. And even to the point when they were working their way further down the list and going, what can we get Adam Fowle for? It feels like that. It feels like there's some sort of exemplary justice being meted out here because of reasons about the nature of the murder. Well, and you know, quite a few people get burned. Black Will gets burnt. Michael only gets hanged
in chains. Flushing in Zeeland. Did Will get as far as the Low Countries?
Flushing is
in Zeeland in the Low Countries.
Whereas Green gets hanged in Kent.
I also have some curiosity as to why the mayor got personally involved in the finding of the body, and whether that kind of the fact that not only were so many people involved in the murder or kind of connected to the murder, but the fact that somehow people of high, you know, status in the town or in the village. One of them got killed and the other one got involved in the finding. Potentially might be why all of this then became, you know, let's setting an example.
I mean, I genuinely don't know from you know, other cases. Oh, this is one for Helen, really, isn't it? Of the, you know, the what kind of punishments would this kind of case, you know, bring about? You know, I was expecting a lot of hangings. I wasn't really expecting quite so many burnings. There's a lot of it about. Eric.
I was about to say something, and then Alexander was gesturing so annoyingly, so not annoyingly, so you know, frustratedly. Yes, and I was just strangling that. But yeah, this is a bit like sort of annoyedly. Thank you. Yeah, just sort of this reminded me a bit of like The Witch of Edmonton, where you've got sort of that kind of thing where it's not her, nothing that happens technically is her fault, but they have to find someone to blame. And they can't really prove any of it being her fault. So they kind of, yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, I would be interested in finding like the source document for the Witch of Edmonton, just because it's such a strange case, I guess.
I think there are more source sessions will be available, depending on how much source material we have reached. I think there is some material for that. I don't know. In fact, it might be quite extensive.
But yeah, it's interesting.
I could be wrong on that off the top of my head. And then we get this weird bit at the end where it's, you know, because we get the, oh, where he died, the body, nothing grows. And then it goes off on this weird land ownership thing that I didn't quite follow, but it was like, yeah, but it caused badness with land deals going forward. Liza?
The widow of the widow of Cook, whose field who had been renting that field, her lease was not expired yet, but Arden took it from her and her new husband. Presumably something to do, maybe the lease was in the name of her deceased first husband, and maybe Arden contested that the lease of the field would be left to her. Anyway, Arden took the field from her, and when he did, she cursed him publicly. And they think that because his dead body was found in that field, although he wasn't murdered there, he was murdered in the house, but because his dead body was found in that field, it must have been the result of her curse that he was murdered. I feel bad for Bradshaw, who died innocent. I also feel kind of bad for Michael, who kept Arden from being murdered on many occasions. Like, arguably, this was because of self-preservation, and he did ultimately join the conspiracy, but you know, he prevented it a good few times, and his own life was in danger beforehand. And the maid, the poor maid.
Alexandra.
Also, there's something very interesting that in the last few paragraphs, several daughters seem to materialize. And they don't get questioned or punished or anything like that. But it struck me when they appeared that, you know, Mistress Arden has one of her daughters play on the virginal to entertain the guests. And she has another one of the daughters help carry the body. And I'm kind of thinking, how much of a wonderful family man was this man, that the entire family is sort of covering up for his murder?
And you know, we get this curse at the very end of the play, where it's at play text, will be a play. It's not like it's something that's presented early on as a thing, as a within the narrative. Who knows? It's a good question. We have no data. We can only speculate. Eric?
I have more questions, not more answers. I was just wondering about the sort of, because like, okay, Blackwell clearly got far enough to sort of escape justice in England, at least. But the others are just like sort of all over the place. Like Arden was, Mistress Arden was burned at Canterbury. Then the Mosby and his sister were hanged in Smithfield. And then Michael was hanged in Feversham and all that stuff. It's not like as across the UK as going, you know, like, oh yeah, he was hanged. It happened in London, and you know, we're hanging him in Scotland. But it just seems like it's sprinkling people across, like in terms of justice and where the punishments are being dealt.
Yeah, it does seem like they're spreading them out a bit. Alexandra?
And to add to Eric's point, what the text says is the condemned persons were diversely executed in sundry places. It doesn't say they were tried in different places.
Mm.
So that is very interesting. Were they, you know, could it be that what happened is they all tried to run away in different directions and some got caught faster than others, some didn't run away at all, some nearly got away with it if it hadn't been for those meddling kids. Or, you know, is it that actually they were tried somewhere, whatever, where the place had jurisdiction over Feversham, but they were spread out in execution in order to spread the story and the example?
Yeah. It does seem that this story does seem to be, you know, notorious. I mean, you know, it's coming from 1550, so, you know, this is before we have a print culture that will be supporting this yet. So how this gets about is an interesting question. Liza?
Yeah, I mean, following on from Alexandra's point, and also points that some other people have made, that these last few paragraphs are very much both mythologizing the murder and also, you know, that murder and executions are public spectacle, or at least, as Alexandra says, they're often, executions are often intended to provide an example, and you get people preaching sermons, and but you also get a sort of mythologization, if that's the word. You know, you get people creeping under the scaffold to collect blood or to collect, you know, bodily fluids or to collect, you know, finger bones and stuff after the bodies are cut down. And you know, mandrakes are supposed to grow where the blood of the condemned is sprinkled. And Arden's, the grass not growing where Arden's body lay is sort of, it's one of these signs and portents that, you know, nature itself recoils from this murder. And and what they were saying about there's a fair on that day, so people are coming back from the fair, and he was thus murdered and lay in the field from midnight till the morning, and so all that day being the fair day till night, all of which day there were many hundreds of people came wondering about him. So what does that sentence mean? Did they come to see the body or to see the place where the body was and wonder at it? Or is this a reference to before he was dead that people came wondering what had happened to him? But in this context, in the early modern context, to wonder at something means to look at it and be amazed by it. So often that's what it means. So that's, you know, death and murder and execution as public acts and the effects that it has on society and how society builds a story around it is my thing here.
Mm. Yes, and there's a lot in this where, you know, we have to take some of it with a pinch of salt. How much of this is true? How much of this is expanded upon? It's written up decades after the event to get into the Chronicle. It's not even, you know, particularly contemporaneous, and then gets turned into a play, which is how most people know it. And whether there's any potential to untangle any of the truth of the matter is, of course, basically impossible. Any final thoughts from the room, then, I think? Greg, on this particularly, you've seen the play. Raise or answer questions?
I think it's a really interesting text. It was lovely to hear. I probably knew it was a real tale when I saw it, but it was nice to hear that some of the more farcical elements of the play are actually based on fact. It's not just that the anonymous or potentially anonymous writer of the play just came up with a really silly plot.
Truth is sometimes, or at least the a version of the truth is stranger than fiction, potentially. Eric, any final thoughts?
Well, if we compare it to the play, it's different, but then this part also seems, this text seems very narrative driven. So there's a part of me going, you could totally turn this into like a small horror podcast or audio blurb type thing, just because it would benefit from like creepy sound effects and that kind of thing. It would lend itself to audio, I think.
Most of the storytelling is actually very strong. There are a few moments where you go, I'm not quite sure, as Liza was talking about, there's elements where the syntax sort of says, is that happening now, or is that something that happened later, or is this the precisely context, especially that end bit as well, which is quite difficult to pass from just a casual listen. But I have to say that that is in my mind, is that there'll be a source reading of this that I might balk at sound effects, especially at the end. The deaths I'm most disturbed by are mostly the people who are involved in the crime at their executions. That I found considerably more disturbing than Arden himself. Liza, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't here when you read the play, but whoever wrote this wrote it quite well. There's you get a sense of a through line to the narrative, and you do get that sort of dark comedy where they fail to murder him multiple times, in part because the servant who's supposed to be in on it doesn't like the murderer. And I think we can all agree that the trouble with trying to have someone murdered is that the kind of person you can employ to murder someone is probably kind of an unreliable person and might also murder a bunch of you or turn you in. So basically, if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. And they should have listened, if they wanted to get away with it and wanted to commit murder, they should have listened to Mosby, who just wanted to pick a fight with the guy, presumably after all these years of Arden inviting him to his house to hang out with his wife. Mosby would have known pretty well how to start a fight with Arden, even if Arden was mostly refusing to be drawn. And who knows, they might have all got away with it.
Alexandra.
Yes, I think part of what makes the real story strange but also interesting is the complexity and the levels of and layers of complication to which they go, which I think is also what you know can make it funny and what clearly the author of the play went for. I think there's something, for me personally, there is something far less enjoyable in the sort of the true crime stories than there is in something fictional or even fictionalized. I do very much like the tone of the storytelling here. I love the fact that it gives us characterization. But at the same time, this is a purportedly neutral narrator's voice, actually for formulating subtle opinions and directing our opinion about some effect, events that actually happened in reality. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how I feel about it as something other than a literary work, whereas with the other one I know exactly what I feel about it as a literary work, mm-hmm. as a work of complete fiction based very closely on accounts of some real things. But I do think it's if we look at it as a literary sort of construct. It has, you know, what you said before about it being chronicle in the very old sense of let me tell you a story and let me give you my view on it and this sort of thing, as opposed to what historians nowadays attempt to do.
Mm. And there's something about when we do, because we haven't done many of these sessions, but when we do something like this where the source is a true thing and we do a text that is purportedly based on it, and the distinction between the two is quite jarring and does make you think about the two in very different ways. I mean, we definitely had that with the spoil of Antwerp as opposed to the Alarum for London, and where, you know, we're discussing war atrocities in first-hand detail. And similarly here, we've got people who are, you know, genuinely don't make it to the end of the text, and they were, at least in theory, real people. At least some of them we can affirm did exist, but some of them we can't. So, yes, there will be more of this source material. Sometimes the sources are also fiction, so these will dance between various areas, and we're going to sort of look at a sort of methodology for what we're doing with sources as we go forward. I'm not quite sure what we're going to do with these, but I'm just sort of playing around the edges and seeing what comes up. But all that remains is to thank all the wonderful readers for all their wonderful reading. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.